thank Mr. Warden as well. Next case for argument is El Bouchon versus Now Fiberglass. Mr. Betts.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Betts here for Mr. Aubuchon. This is a Family Medical Leave Act case in which the district court held that there was indeed a serious health condition by Mrs. Aubuchon because of any period
of... What was the serious health condition? I never understood that.
It was any period of incapacity due to pregnancy or prenatal care. And hers, clearly stated by the attending physician in the doctor's note to the company, was that Steve was off work to assist his wife because of complications of pregnancy.
Well, what complications?
She was undergoing false labor, Your Honor.
That's quite common, isn't it? I mean, premature contractions.
In this case, it was common. She had undergone that, and she needed the care of her husband because of these complications and the reoccurring nature of the complications.
Well, so, unless a woman schedules the delivery, there's always going to be uncertainty about when exactly, you know, she goes into labor. So, what's the difference in this case and a case where someone says, well, I want to stay home with my wife because she could go into labor at any time and I want to, you know, drive her to the hospital?
I think the difference is that we have a medical doctor who would classify this as a condition that she was under the care of the physician. And the physician,
of course she is. I mean, obviously.
And the physician had said that she is in such need. Her pregnancy is complicated, and there is need
for the care. But the only complication is there's more than unusual uncertainty as to exactly when the baby will arrive because there are these false alarms, right?
I do not believe so. I think there were complications to the pregnancy.
Well, what's the evidence? Is there, you know, an illness or something?
Well, indeed, that is the very point, Your Honor. The Family Medical Leave Act provides a process to discern that.
Yes, I know, but now you're in court. So, is there any affidavit as to the nature of her problem?
Yes, indeed there was. Indeed, there was testimony from the attending physician, Dr. Birch, as well as Exhibit 35, a note from him to the company prior to any litigation saying that the husband needed the care for his wife because of complications.
You just said that. My question, what is the medical name of these complications?
Other than premature labor. I mean, pain. Because I have the same question as Judge Post.
And it comes down to the fact that she was put on bed rest and the doctor felt that she needed this kind of bed rest and needed to not carry on her daily activities and was incapacitated due to pregnancy. And that is indeed the definition of the Family Medical Leave Act regulation. Excuse me.
So 9 months, of course, we know. So how soon before the 9 month point did she start to have these contractions?
I believe it was approximately 30 days prior. These points are precisely why the Family Medical Leave Act first defines it as any period of incapacity due to pregnancy or prenatal care. And the Family Medical Leave Act provides a wonderful way for the employer and the employee to work together and discover what it is and if it is indeed necessary. But that was truncated here by the employer, who refused to regard any of the notice given to it as sufficient and truncate the process that the Family Medical Leave Act provides in an attempt to discern those facts. And that is, if the employer does not see Dr. Birch's information as sufficient, it can send Mrs. Aubuchon to the doctor to get its own opinion and then can get a third opinion. And that is the whole underlying purpose of a very low threshold of notice whether it be notice in an exigent or non-exigent circumstance. Indeed, there is case law that says in exigent circumstances or in unforeseeable circumstances, it should be a much more relaxed standard of what notice is.
So before his termination, did he make it clear to the company that his wife was suffering from pregnancy complications?
Absolutely. He made it clear that he needed leave for the pregnancy of his wife.
And did he say it was because of pregnancy complications?
He could not recall precisely if he used those magic word complications, but under the
standard. And nothing in writing that said pregnancy complications. He just said basically he wanted leave because she was pregnant.
No, he did far more than that. He said he needed leave because his doctor told him he needed to care for his wife because she had pregnancy. And he was in an exigent circumstance, as I believe any husband is for any wife, when the doctor tells you to stay home and care for that wife. And he left a very sufficient voicemail for the nurse who could have followed up at that point, and that is everything we know about the FMLA. That is the employer's duty, especially if the employer does not believe they have sufficient information on which to make a decision. But moreover, the whole FMLA process allows for this, but it was truncated in this situation by the employer, who simply wanted to put the cart before the horse and not allow the FMLA process to take place, which is, if the employer doesn't like the information, which is fine, that is going to occur at the workplace many a time, they can send that employee and that employee's wife to get their own opinion from their own doctor and then a third opinion. That was very thoughtful process by Congress in setting up
that
process.
Now, according to your opponent, I'm looking at page 17 of the brief, the forms that the employer received all referred to this, all implied this was entirely routine pregnancy and the husband simply wanted to be home with his wife till the baby was born. Are they misrepresenting the state of the documents or leaving something out or what?
Yes, the documents, first of all, the medical certification form is incomplete and insufficient. However, as we know under 29 CFR section 825.305.
Can I ask you a more specific question? Are these correct representations as to what the documents state?
The documents that were submitted include...
Yes or no?
I believe there was sufficient information...
Would you answer my question? Are these correct representations concerning the contents of these documents?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't have their brief in front of me to make that representation or not, but what I can represent to you, Your Honor, is that there was sufficient documentation to show that the doctor himself
specifically, what is the document that you rely on?
Exhibit number 35, Your Honor, the medical
note. What is Exhibit 35?
It is the note from First Land Family Medical Practice Clinic. And moreover, Your Honor.
Where is it? What is the date?
The date of it is November 27, 00, meaning 2000.
And is it in the appendix? Maybe I just missed it.
I believe it is, but I will get that from my... I will get that from my brief upon my rebuttal.
Okay.
And my point is here that there is always going to be a scatter of information.
November 27th. Now, the baby was born in, when was the baby born? In August or September? November 27th date is puzzling.
There is always going to be a scatter of information, especially in unforeseeable, exigent...
The baby was born in September, right?
Yes. And this,
so what's this November 27th?
It was...
That must be afterwards.
Yes, it is.
But the question is, what notice did the company receive before he took this absence?
It received three notices, Your Honor. It received a phone call to the
nurse. But none of those notices referred to complications.
But the FMLA does not require magic words.
But if all the employer knows is that this is a routine pregnancy, or all the employer has reason to think it's a routine pregnancy, then the FMLA isn't in play.
Absolutely wrong. Under the FMLA, all the employee must do is not practice law, but to give sufficient notice that need is necessary. It is a very low threshold.
Well, you can't just say, I need leave because I'm going to Las Vegas to play the slot machines, right? You have to have a serious
condition. And that is why the FMLA provides such a wonderful process to discern this, not at the front end, but at the back end. We want to know the truth, whether it was Las Vegas slot machines or whether it was a serious health condition that even the district court here found that it was a serious health condition.
So this Exhibit 35 is the note that mentions complications?
Yes, that is a note from Birchland.
That's your big document. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Bax. Mr. Yerkes?
May it please the Court, my name is Ken Yerkes, and together with my colleague, Patty Ogden, we represent the appellee, Knauf Fiberglass. Let me address a couple of the questions you raised for counsel for appellant. First, with respect to the information that Knauf Fiberglass received, I think it's important to note that the certification form is a permissive opportunity for the employer to find out what condition the employee is in and whether they have a serious health condition. In this case, the Knauf had antecedent information from the employee himself, uncontradicted in the record, that suggested there were no contradictions, more than suggested that he admitted there were no complications. I direct the Court's attention to our supplementary appendix 234, lines 1 through 4, where Mr. Knauf testified. He had a conversation with the plaintiff, and he says, under oath, I asked him if she was having complications, that being his wife, and his response to me was, no, he was just waiting for the baby to be born. That information, Mr. Knauf then put in the form of a document, which the Court relied upon in footnote 2 of her opinion, indicating that since the time his wife had fallen labor on August 19th or 20th, she was experiencing no complications and that he was off work waiting for the baby to be born. Notwithstanding this direct information from Mr. Abishan, Knauf, as is its policy, allowed him to submit a certification, asked him to submit a certification to confirm the nature of the absence. That is the employer's right under 825.307. Again, this is permissive. And if an employee, after being allowed to submit the form, submits a complete certification form signed by the provider, the employer may not request. The regulations specifically prohibit further follow-up.
Well, what happens if the employer finds out later, November 27th, that there were complications? What's the legal significance of that?
Your Honor, I would suggest that the legal significance is not material. We should be judged by what we knew at the time. And this is a fundamental problem with the position.
But wasn't he fired later?
No, he was fired effective September 6th. He reported back to work September 6th, Your Honor, was terminated for the absences that preceded that. He was later reinstated.
Oh, right. So he was reinstated.
He was reinstated. The information that he provided was during the grievance process. When he was appealing his termination through the contract, he submitted information that would support his position now.
And your position is that if the... that the company has no duty to reinstate someone that it fired because it reasonably believed that he didn't have an FMLA excuse. Is that your position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. As long as we have properly relied upon the certification form and the information we got from the employee, him or herself, which is all we're entitled to do under the statute, we cannot go further. We're entitled to make the decision, and we really should close the door on the suggestions made by plaintiff's counsel here that we can later have later submitted doctor slips which contradict or add to the information that was provided to the employer at the time it was making its decision. And I would refer the Court to the underlying purpose of the statute, to the desire for speed, for efficiency, for the employer's obligation to respond to an employee's request within 2 working days. The underlying policy of the statute is to bring finality to this disclosure. by employee to the employer as quickly as possible, and let the employee off the hook. Let him or her know that the leave
is... Has this particular issue in, you know, your position that November 27th, forget about, you know, whether it's adequate, but you're saying it's too late.
Yes, sir.
Now, in support of that position, you cite a district court case. Has this issue arisen at the appellate level, or...?
Your Honor, I don't know that it's risen in the FMLA context. It obviously has arisen in other contexts in this circuit, sexual harassment context, in Title VII context, where you have said that an employer must be judged by what it knew at the time, and I don't think there's any basis to change the game with respect to FMLA, and I think, as I said earlier, maybe more, most importantly, it should be the case here, where you don't want to have a plaintiff engage in revisionist history after the fact. The statute mandates that they have to give leave 30 days in advance if the event is foreseeable. That's ample time for the employer and employee to work out any differences they have as to whether this is or is not a covered circumstance. To drag it out ad infinitum, even by plaintiff's argument, into the litigation context. At what point is the plaintiff precluded from actually supplementing the original medical information? There's no answer to that, I think, in the plaintiff's position. You have to bring finality. You're going to get doctor shopping, and you're going to get second guessing, and you're going to get people who educate themselves after a termination has occurred. And there's no need, especially in the facts of this case, for us to go there, because I direct the court to this fact. Under the contract, Mr. Abichon was not terminated perfunctorily. He was terminated under the contract with 7 days intent to terminate. He was suspended, with 7 days intent to terminate. He had 7 days between the September 6th meeting with the union and his employer where he was told he was going to be terminated to the actual termination date to provide any information that he felt would supplement and educate the employer that this was somehow the information that was submitted by his health care provider and him was incomplete. He did not.
When did his reinstatement occur?
His reinstatement occurred later, I believe December of that year, pursuant to a negotiation between the union and company based on a plea made by the union president to the company to take mercy on this gentleman, to please return to work without back pay, and the counselings that were attendant to that reinstatement are in the record. Essentially, we did him a favor. We returned him to work with the stipulation there would be no back pay. He signed off on that agreement. We returned him to work under those circumstances. So far from this being a case where the employer was cold and heartless and was out to terminate an individual for exercising his rights under the FMLA, this employer went the extra step, actually returned him pursuant to a negotiated agreement.
When did you find out that he had three prior occasions of dismissal for...
The first time that we learned that, Your Honor, was in his deposition when we were deposing him about the application information that he submitted. Prior to the deposition, we had done third-party discovery and had learned that he had failed to disclose other employers. And based on the information we received back, it appeared as if he had been terminated for attendance-related reasons. Those were confirmed in his deposition. Based on those revelations in his deposition, he was terminated immediately because that is Knopf policy and that is required under the statement in the application with respect to what will occur.
Well, but just going back to your prior point, we don't even have to get to setting a deadline or a cutoff for supplements if we buy your position that he really didn't give you adequate notice that there were exigent circumstances here to qualify.
Yeah.
Her, I mean, even if we assume there was a complication of the pregnancy, let's assume that the false labor was indeed a complication.
Yeah.
If he didn't give you adequate notice, we don't even have to get to these other issues. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it is the employee's obligation to provide at least verbal notice to us of the underlying circumstance that would make this a qualifying leave. Not that it's just a serious health condition. There has to be some indication by the employee or their spokesperson, here the doctor, that this was there was present incapacity or a need to care for. Both of those elements were lacking in this case as of the time the termination decision was made, despite opportunity for Mr. Abichon to provide that. I would also direct your attention to the red herring debate over the certification form. There is no confusion. There was no uncertainty by the company, as they testified under oath, that the form was complete in all material respects. And I would direct your honors to the form itself, which is in evidence as a supplementary appendix at 007 through 011. On that form itself, under 5C, the healthcare provider is asked to answer this specific question. If the condition is chronic condition or pregnancy, state whether the patient is presently incapacitated. Of course, those are the magic words which turn this into a qualifying event for leave, as opposed to someone simply having a condition, a serious health condition, which may or may not be presently incapacitating. And in response to that, on the first page, 007, all the health care provider wrote was wife pregnant. And that simply isn't enough to indicate incapacity or need to care. I don't think anybody would argue that a normal healthy pregnancy is incapacitizing. It simply is not. The other parts of the form, 8C, and this is on page 008 to 009, there are a series of questions that give the healthcare provider or the employee spokesperson the opportunity to indicate whether or not the individual needs to be home to care for the spouse or a family member, to provide psychological comfort, etc. All of those are checked NA. All of the critical information that was on this form matched precisely the information that we had received from the horse's mouth, from Mr. Abichon, that there were no complications, and therefore this would not qualify for leave under the FMLA. The doctor slip that is attached to it at the time by Dr. Birch, who, by the way, is the same doctor who provided 35, merely represents, and this is on SA006, that his wife was pregnant, due to deliver any day. He's assisting his wife at home with the first child. Your Honor, there is nothing in this record that would suggest that this Mr. Abichon's wife had anything other than a normal routine pregnancy. The certification form was complete on its face. We had no further duty to inquire. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yerkes. Mr. Beth, how much time does he have? No time? Well, we'll give you a minute.
Your Honor, just less than about 10 days ago, the Sixth Circuit spoke to this issue of what is the standard for notice in exigent versus non-exigent circumstances, or foreseeable and unforeseeable. The standard, the court said, is most logical that standard is very low. Indeed, what we want to get to is not
anything
with what is
this gives. Recent case?
Yes, it is Cavin, C-A-V-I-N, versus Honda, Sixth Circuit, October 10, 2003. The court says, from a reading of the totality of the circumstances and a totality of the FMLA, we lower that standard. We don't want to play games with notice. What we want to do is get the truth here. What actually happened? Were there complications? We know as fact there were complications here. There's no doctor shopping. That was truncated. That whole FMLA process was truncated by the employer here, who can play games with notice far too often. If this notice...
Well, let me just stop here.
Yes.
You know, the 7-day period when he got notice that he was probably going to be fired, why wasn't there a report filed during that period? Certainly, he could have gone to the doctor and gotten the very same thing that he filed in November.
He could. And as a person who works on these issues a great deal, Your Honor, doctors simply are very, very difficult to get these notices from. It is a very much a matter of fact when you're an individual who's a daily laborer at an hourly wage that it is very difficult to get a doctor to write these.
Did he try?
Did he ask and then get rejected and then present that to the committee? Because that would help save them.
That's why they put him out to work. Not because, I mean, we're getting into finny facts, but it's not because of the good-hearted nature. It's because they know they violated FMLA. That's why they put him back to work.
So he indicated at that hearing that he asked for that the doctor did not provide it.
That there were real complications.
And he got reinstated.
Absolutely. That there
Are
were real complications.
He told them at the hearing that he tried to get a report from the doctor.
That is my understanding. And that is often
not
in the
record, though. Is it?
Standing here, Your Honor, I could file supplemental brief to you to find out. I do not have that.
But that would seem to be a very critical factor in your favor, and you don't make mention of it in your brief either, do you?
It is always a factor of trying to get this information pulled out of a doctor. The information that individuals give to employers is often insufficient, but under 29 CFR 825.305, the employer must notify, look, this is insufficient for your leave. You're asking for leave here, Mr. Aubuchon, but it's insufficient. Now, if you want to cure that, please go cure it. And they have a duty to allow him sufficient time to cure it. The reason they put him back to work was because they knew they violated FMLA. They didn't do it out of the goodness of their heart, because after he filed a lawsuit, they suspended him again.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Beck.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Yerkes. Next case for argument is